Welcome to Dracena Wines Podcast. Our wines plus your moments equals great memories. I'm your host, Lori, and this is a podcast about all things wine.
Hey, everyone. Welcome to my latest podcast episode. This is part of a series called Dracena Wines on Wine, where I sit down with someone in the wine industry and get their perspective. In this podcast, I had a great time speaking with Alistair Veen, who was named the BC Somm of the Year. We discussed not only what it was like to be in the competition, the stress of being in the competition, and also what it was like after he was announced the winner. He claims to be a chef before all else, and he owns his own restaurant called Tap, of which apparently some people have a tough time remembering that three-letter name. I was introduced to him by a gentleman named Charn Rye, who sent me a pretty amazing product to sample called the V-Spin, which hyper-aerates your wine. No need to decant for hours, just V-Spin a few minutes, and the results are outrageous. So join me as we discuss many facets of being in the wine industry and what it is like to be involved in the development of a new product that really is impressive. So hi, everybody. This is Lori with Dracena Wines, and welcome to this episode of Dracena Wines on Wine. And today I have a very special guest here, Alistair Veen. Did I say that, Lola? Okay, said it right? Woo! Okay. And I was introduced to him because of this product that I tried called V-Spin, and I honestly fell in love with the product. And I wanted to learn more. And so I reached out, and the developer Charn came back and introduced me through an email to Alistair, and we are here. So welcome, and thank you for taking time from, I'm sure, your very, very busy schedule to join us tonight.
I appreciate it.
First off, I got to go with right off the bat that you were BC Sommelier of the Year. Like,
right.
That is insane. Insane. So tell me, like, how do you even come to competing in a competition like that?
Interestingly enough, my name was submitted by my tasting group. So they basically entered me into the competition. I was a little bit resistant at first, but you know what? I dove in with both feet, and that was my first ever competition. So I didn't practice anything. I just kind of walked in cold and very fortunately won. The truth is that I'm sort of the ex-sommelier of BC now, because now my colleague Shane Taylor carries the hefty belt that comes along with it. And we are training the next generation right now. So the new sommelier of BC competition is in 2 Mondays, or it's the 29th. So next Monday.
Oh.
So that'll be the next competition as well. And they are so much fun. Some people would argue that it's not much of a spectator sport because it's just sort of people swirling, sipping, and serving wine. But once you sort of get into it, it's really, really exciting. And watching those competitions live and seeing how nervous those guys are and watching them, you know, just handle so much pressure with such grace is very exciting.
So if you went into it cold, so I don't know if the competition is the same. I don't even know if the show is still on, but there was a show called Uncorked, I think it was, that showed the process of becoming a master or something.
Yeah.
Did you have to do those three categories also?
Yeah. The it's a little bit more reality driven. A lot of the Uncorked stuff was very crazy situations, but yeah, anything is fair game for sure. So depending on the level that you're competing at, the situations become more and more unbelievable and unrealistic, but you're expected to just be able to roll with the punches and go for it. So it seems like so much pressure, and it is, but you have to sort of approach it with a light heart. You can't get down on it, because it's not, some of this stuff would never, ever happen inside a restaurant.
Right? I don't know. Some of the things that were on the show, I was like, oh my gosh, you know, so I have to say congratulations. Now, do you get to be a judge?
I have hosted the competition. I'm not sitting as a judge on it this year. I may get invited to in the future. It's a pretty tight-knit group of judges that judges, for instance, Master Sommelier John Szabo judged the Nationals. I don't think I'm quite at the level of judging those sort of competitions yet, but I am judging the junior competition this year. So I'm practicing my judging. We'll see how it goes.
So you're a junior judge then?
A junior judge, that's right. Maybe I'm the one that has to be nervous in the competition and not the competitors, right?
That's awesome. That's awesome. Well, congratulations. It sounds extremely impressive to me, and to be able to blind taste, not only just blind taste, I think that's difficult in its own right, but you were timed, right? So yeah.
Every station has a time limit. So you do a sparkling wine service, you do a decanting service, you do a food and wine pairing, you do blinds. So there's spirits, cocktails, and wine. Then there's the menu list corrections, which is absolutely terrifying. You have 2 minutes. They put a wine list in front of you on a gigantic screen, and then you're expected to find all the mistakes and then correct them as well. It's unbelievably stressful. Or they'll put pictures up and you have 3 seconds to look at the picture and say who it is or what it is or where it is or what's happening in that picture. And then the slide is gone just like that. And you're on to the next one. So it's very, very stressful. So that was the national competition this year. So I competed for the Best Sommelier of Canada about 4 months ago. And that I learned so much in that competition. Watching those guys compete was very, very intense for sure. But again, they're so graceful and they handle the pressure so well and do such a great job.
Wow. So I read that there were three finalists in the competition. Sean Nelson of Vige's Restaurant in Vancouver, Shane Taylor of Chin Chin. In Vancouver, and then you own Tap Restaurant, right?
That's right.
Surrey. But they said that it was super, super tight, that it was a point or something separated first and second place. Were you in a green room or something waiting for this ?
No, we were at the bar. We were at the after party. So both Shane and Sean are very good friends of mine, very close colleagues. I feel privileged to taste with those guys and study with those guys all the time. But I mean, our tasting group has, ever since the inception of that competition, our tasting group has done extremely well. So only the first year was the winner of that competition, not someone from our tasting group. So we have very, very high expectations from it. So, Shane won last year and Sean is definitely going to be a contender this year. I never thought that I was going to win. So I thought it was a shoe-in for Shane to win that. So I was not nervous. They said, we've deliberated long and hard. And I thought, oh, this is a really good show. It's all an act. They're about to name Shane Taylor Sommelier of the Year, and he totally deserves it. And they called my name, and my jaw hit the floor. I couldn't believe it. I wasn't prepared for that reaction. I wasn't prepared to win it. It was a complete and utter surprise to me because Shane is such a consummate professional. And when he won this year, knowing, watching his what he did this year and how clinical and precise he was, to think that I could even come anywhere close to that sort of performance is very, very humbling for sure.
Wow. I know I could never do that. First of all, I couldn't even pick Paso. If you gave me blind tastings of Paso, I mean, maybe East, West, I might be, that's about it. I couldn't, be anything further than that. And that's my own little area. Never mind not knowing where it could be from. That blows me away that that's possible. And then you also had to choose wine and food pairings, right? You had to suggest food. Yeah. Did you have a menu or just had to pull food out of your brain?
No, they put a menu up on the screen. So you're in a room. There's two or three different screens. There's audience to your back of all of the restaurateurs, peers, judges, somms, writers, all that sort of stuff. And so you sort of have your back to them and then you're facing tables of judges and answering questions. So you get given the menu before you walk into the room and you have sort of 2 minutes to look it over. And then you go straight to the first table, start answering questions. So you sort of have an idea of what is on the menu. Mm-hmm. But the menu pops up on the screen and they just start asking questions about wine pairings. There's usually a thread that it follows.
Okay.
For instance, last year, The third was British Columbia. And so they were asking for Canadian, or sorry, the focus was Canada at the Vancouver Wine Fest last year. So they were focusing on Canadian wines. So you're asked to pick wines for a five-course meal, not from the same region. So you had to pick one from each province, basically. So you're going to start on the East Coast and work your way all to the West Coast, or however you so choose to do it, but you weren't allowed to repeat a province. So it was very difficult. And then you had, from the year that I won, it was Italian wine pairings. So they were the same sort of idea. They wanted sparkling, they wanted white, they wanted red, they wanted dessert wines. And again, you weren't allowed to repeat a region that they were in. So, or you weren't allowed to repeat a varietal for the region.
Wow. That's like stress on top of stress.
That's the area that I'm pretty good with. So, I mean, I'm a chef first and I'm a sommelier second, and I do countless wine and food pairing menus. So I sort of, I wouldn't say I have a knack for it, but I don't feel I have the same sort of pressure as someone that doesn't have a cooking background.
Right. Well, that was actually a perfect lead in, because that was going to be my next question, is that you actually are a chef and your first job was at the age of 15 working in a restaurant. So, like, what formal training have you had, and, you know, did you want to just expand your chef skills to becoming a somm, or they do go hand in hand, but they are very different also. So,
well, I think that once I kind of got into my own restaurant, I realized that if anyone was going to be pushing the wine and food pairing sort of direction, it would probably have to be me. And our customers are very savvy, and so I wasn't able to just make stuff up on the spot. So I started pursuing my wine education. I started with the International Sommelier Guild. I did their level one and level two, and then I transferred over to the WSET program. So I did that training as well before I moved into the Court of Masters, where I'm currently doing, you know, that training. And then from the culinary side, you know, it really is more just the School of Hard Knocks. I cooked for the bulk of my adult life, and I tried to get out of it, but it just kept bringing me back. And so I'm a Red Seal certified chef now. I finished my certification several years ago. I have apprenticed a number of chefs as well. I just have a constant desire for study. Like, I'm always working on something. And it became a pretty logical progression to work on wine. It's also really delicious. And having wine and food together, exploring the dynamics of those pairings. I mean, you can learn a lot from terrible pairings. You can learn a lot from great pairings. And so, yeah, I feel myself getting drawn further and further into it.
So I just had a question. So if you do wine pairing dinners, I would assume, at your, right? So how do you do that? I come to you with my Cabernet Franc and I'm like, do you taste it? Do I get to say what I think, you know, like?
For sure. All of those things are possible. So, I mean, whatever, if you're coming to me and you want to do a wine dinner, then I'm going to listen to how you want to sort of do and how you want to do the pairings. And I'm going to advise, or I'm going to, you know, give my opinion. If you tell me what the bottle is, I'm going to make a very good guess at what it's probably going to taste like, and then structure the pairings around that. When a lot of wine and food pairings is conviction, where if you believe that the pairing is great and you can sort of, you know, like massage the pairing a little bit, either with seasoning or acidity or whatever the case is, then you're probably going to end up with something enjoyable. And I mean, it's more likely going to be enjoyable than not enjoyable, that's for sure. So there's a little bit of showmanship for sure involved in it. But at the end of the day, you know, if you came up to me with a Cab Franc, then I'm going to want to know where it's from and how ripe it is. And at that point, I can probably come up with some half-decent pairings for you.
Awesome. Awesome. So you have also earned, talk about you like studying. You've got a lot of awards for all your studying. You've earned the distinction in the French Wine Scholar Program and became one of the 5% of candidates to pass the Court of Master Somms advanced certification on your first try.
Yeah, that was nerve-wracking. and a very humbling experience. And, again, the court is a very unique program because, for the most part, it's self-study. So we took a course with them for 3 days in Dallas where they sort of gave us the context of the level at which we needed to be studying and tasting at. But other than that, it's all on your own. and then you just show up to the exam and see what happens. And yeah, it's nerve-wracking because there's people, you're only allowed to write once a year, and you know, people get waitlisted for it. And so if you don't pass, and then the next year you might not get in because someone else who has as many or just as much qualifications might get that seat. And, you know, somebody already gave you a chance, and so now it's up to somebody else. So you really only have a limited number of chances to do it before either the business moves past you or time kind of moves past you. But yeah, I was very fortunate to pass it on my first try. Again, you know, sometimes I feel like since I'm a shepherd, I'm always waiting for the court to expose me as a fraud. But so far, I've made it through the exams in such a fashion to pass. So maybe it's a chip on my shoulder that makes me study a little bit harder, and know that it doesn't come so naturally to me, because there's a lot of people that have been doing this their whole life, whereas I'm more of a newcomer to the game.
So what I guess you kind of already answered it. But what do you consider your strongest suit as a psalm?
At this point, I would probably say preparation. I think that I study the material so that it isn't quite so off the cuff. Okay. Now, I mean, wine and food pairing for sure requires a little bit of preparation and a little bit of showmanship, like I said. But yeah, I think that just the preparation side of things is probably what I do best. And then that leads into, you know, the study side and then the actual presentation side.
And what do you think is your toughest aspect of it?
For sure, us studying producers so that I can remember. So if you ask me, you know, what the top producer of this region is and what their style is, that's definitely the weakest part. I think that's probably the weakest part for a lot of people, but for sure that's my weakest part. I dread questions that are multi-part, where it's producer-driven, where you're asked to identify a region and then talk about a couple producers in that region and then differentiate the style between those two producers. Those are just terrifying questions for me because, again, I feel like just my knowledge of producers is my weak spot.
Okay. But, well, there's so many of them, and
so many. And you're expected to know all of them, like they lived in your basement for 2 years or whatever it is, right? You're like, oh yeah, that producer in Chinon who uses whole cluster fermentation and old
Joe. Oh, yeah. Yeah, it's Joe.
His son just broke up with his girlfriend, and you know, that's sometimes the level at which we're expected to speak about these producers, right?
It's crazy. So tell me about your restaurant Tap. How long has it been opened? Is this your first restaurant? And
yeah, so
I'm a beer girl also. So where's the name come from?
I tell different stories about the origin of the name all the time. I always make up different things because the real story is not that interesting and kind of silly. So I always make up new things. Right now we are very close to a golf course. So we're very close to Morgan Creek Golf Course. So I like to say that we are a tap in from the golf course. So that's my current story. All right. So,
okay.
And I'm sticking to it.
Okay. Okay.
The restaurant's been here for 11 years. Okay. So and seven of that, I've been the owner. Prior to that, I was the chef. And yeah, so we've been having this wild roller coaster of a ride out here in South Surrey for the last 11 years.
So you were a chef. It was called Tap when you were a chef there?
That's right.
Okay. And
I wanted to change the name, but at that point it had sort of enough critical and commercial success that we thought jumping ship might not be so smart. It's one syllable. Everyone gets it wrong all the time. They either say the tap or taps. It's only three letters, you know, you still find a way of messing it up. But I love my guests equally, so if they want to call it the tap, then that's just fine by me.
Whatever, as long as you keep coming in and enjoying exactly, my right? food and my wine list, we're all good. You can call it Pat for all I care.
There you go. That was one of the names we joked about. We were like, well, we'll just flip the letters and call it Pat. But it's a bad joke.
So, on your website, it says that you are committed to providing the best local meats and vegetables. So, the first thing, and this is so bad, and I apologize, but the first thing that came to my mind when I read that was the movie, the Internship with Vince Vaughn and whatever the other guy name is, where they work for Google, and they go to the. Have you seen this movie?
I haven't seen this movie.
Okay, well, you're missing out because it's hysterical. But okay.
I'm studying all the time. I don't have time to watch it.
But in the movie, Vince Vaughn gets an internship at Google, and he has to go sell Google whatever ads. And he goes into the pizza place, and the pizza place doesn't want to buy. And all he's doing is like, you know, I know, you go local, you go local. You can go to that farmer's market where you can smell all that food, right, coming in. And, you know, and that's just what it reminded me of. And that was a really long story, especially since you didn't see the movie. But when you get a break from studying, go see the movie, because it is by far hysterical. But Do you go to farmer's markets? Like, how do you, what's your connection?
Yeah, for sure. We, there's a number of farmers markets around here. So I'm close to White Rock, and every Sunday there's a White Rock farmers market, especially in the summer. It's like a big outdoor affair. We have two farmers markets in Vancouver that are celebrated as well. And we can learn so much at those, even if it's through conversations or just learning about new products or why products are the way that they are. We also have a lot of producers that come to us. Some we meet at farmers markets, and I mean, obviously in passing, you know, you give your business cards or whatnot, and they follow up, and then they show up. Sometimes they show up at a restaurant with a truck filled full of vegetables, and it's sort of just like, what would you like? Right? And you're just hauling things off the back of this truck and chucking into the kitchen, and you go, I mean, that's definitely the romantic side of it, too. It's not like every Wednesday there's like a big pickup truck outside my restaurants with like a guy shoveling vegetables into the restaurant, so to speak. But yeah, we create some pretty solid partnerships, and you know, I love those loyalties where, you know, someone runs out of this crop but now they're growing this crop, and so you just take it anyways and see what you can do with it and roll with it. We're truly blessed with a farmer just down the hill from us who grows so many different vegetables well into the fall. He still keeps like some of his squashes and coolers for us down at the farm right now, so we can roll down there and get some unusual squashes like even now. So.
Oh, wow. Wow. That's awesome. I'm all for supporting local.
It keeps the kitchen excited too. It keeps us kind of pushing recipes forward, and it keeps the servers sort of learning about new ingredients as well. So I think it benefits everyone from the farmer all the way to the guests, right? And lots of learning along the way.
That's perfect. That's perfect. So you are the chef, the somm, and the owner. How do you divide your time?
Look where my hairline is. I don't have any gray in there yet, but it won't be long for sure. I think I've stitched that together into a pretty uniform hat at this point. The owner side of things, you know, happens. For instance, today we're closed. I'm at the restaurant just working on some stuff in the office. I get ready for our staff meetings tomorrow. And then from the somm side of things, I mean, I'm always the somm. And I have a great service team that I teach a ton about wine to. I put them all through their wine education as well so that they can kind of bring that to the table. And then for my cooks and my chefs, I put them through the same culinary program that I did. So, I mean, they all are apprenticed to be Red Seal chefs. And so, yeah, we're all just kind of paying it forwards in terms of training to make sure that, you know, I don't have to wear all those hats and feel the weight of them on my neck. I kind of spread it around a little bit. And I mean, that's something that I can learn as well, right, is not having to wear those hats all the time and being able to trust the team. And so far, they do such a fantastic job.
Okay, so my next question is really how I got introduced to you is by this product that, and I'm using the word amazing because I really can't think of another word. Yes, like the V-Spin. Like, so I saw it online. I think Instagram, I'm not really sure. I saw it. And the first thing, being the microbiologist, you know, I can't get out of me, I saw an auger spinner and I was like, oh, duh, that's like brilliant. Like, why did I not think of this? Like, you know, this should have been my product. So I reached out and I asked if there was a way I can get a sample of this to try it out. And I, in my, like my brain, half my brain was like, this is genius. It's going to work. This is brilliant. And then the other half was like, oh, this is going to be another one of those. Yeah, 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 yes. You know, and I tried it and I did it live, which normally I'm like, all right, well, let me video it and then post it. I did it live. This thing is freaking amazing, in my opinion. I mean, it really is amazing.
It's a game changer.
Love at first sight. So, like, show that again so that they can see it, so that people can see it.
Well, this is a decanter. It's a German crystal designed by Spieglau. And in the very bottom here is a little magnetic clutch attached to what you might recognize as a magnetic stir bar.
Yeah.
So I'm sure you've seen them before. Everyone suffered through dealing with magnetic stir bars for at least a small portion of their high school careers. So everyone feels a certain familiarity to it for sure. And the first time that I saw it, my reaction was more or less the same as yours. First of all, I was like, surely this has been done before. And then I totally see how this is going to go. I understand hyper scanning of mine. But at the same time, I'm not a believer in gimmicks, right? I mean, I'm a believer in the classic way of serving wine. So I had my own mental obstacles to overcome, just as I'm sure you did. But you know, the first time I tried wine out of this decanter, I knew that we were onto something very special and something that absolutely has to be shared with everyone that loves wine.
Right. So tell me how, so the creator is Charn Rye, right?
Charn Rye.
Rye. And yeah. How did your relationship with him, how did he just come walking through your door and say, hey, look what I got? You know, like.
That's exactly how it went. That is exactly how it went. I was working on something and, you know, someone came by and said, there's a gentleman here that wants to speak with you about a decanter. And so I came in, or he came up to where I was, and he showed me the original sort of design. It was super clunky. It was very loud. And so, I mean, that was already two strikes against. Plus, it was a gimmick. I was like, no way. This isn't what I do, right? And he's like, well, let's try it out, right? And so he purchased a bottle of wine, and we tasted it, and right away I was shocked. And he told me that that he was going to go talk to the folks over at Riedel and have them design this decanter to eliminate all the things that were hesitations for me. And I said, all right, Charn, when you get back from Switzerland, you know, give me a call, or whatever the case was. And he did just that. He met with Riedel and then came back with his design. And said, how about now? I said, all right. You know, we did so many tests with the original decanter. And, you know, originally we were spinning wines for like 10, 15 minutes. And slowly we started dialing them down to like 2 minutes, 4 minutes, 5 minutes sort of spin times. And the results just again and again and again and again. The wine is just so much more open. It is that much more drinkable. It is softer. It is sexier. It is, yeah, like, wines that are borderline undrinkable. We just V-spinned a 2010 Frescobaldi at Laioli 2 weeks ago. My tasting group, and that wine is massive and not drinkable and very tannic. And you know, we spun it for 3 minutes. We tasted it. We're like, goodness gracious, like let's go for longer. We spun it for 3 more minutes. We spun it for 6 minutes. And after 6 minutes, the wine was just beautiful. It was showing such wonderful texture. The fruit was right there for the taking. It wasn't locked up behind all of that tannin and kind of closedness. It was one of the more eye-opening demonstrations for sure. But I mean, you don't have to use a 2010 Lemuele to see like how dramatic the V-spin is. I mean, we use this in the restaurant, for tableside service. We use it behind the bar. I was privileged because I was the only person in the whole world that had one of these things for like 6 months. And so people would come to the restaurant simply to see it done. And so I had people lining up to try it out. And so now it's a little bit more accessible. Obviously, there's lots of restaurants around the city that are treating their guests to this sort of a wine experience now. So I needed something new. And so I have something new right here. This is Charn's next level. This is the 1 and 2. So this is for a glass at a time or a half liter at a time or 2 glasses at a time or whatever you want. So now I'm the only person in the world that has one of these.
Oh, but I'm jealous. I'm jealous.
Yeah. You know what this is handy for is for using with the Coravin. So we have the Coravin program here, obviously. And so we're taking single glasses out of a sealed bottle and opening it up right away. So you really get the benefit of the Coravin's usefulness, and you couple that with V-spin functionality or V-spin sort of like aeration, and you've got a really special experience there for sure. Oh, I know lots of people have Korovins, so.
Yeah, I have a Korovin. I'm really kind of jealous now. Because that is true, you know, and that is true. You know, you go and you Korovin something, but then, like, you're decanting a glass? Like, what do you do? You know, like, it's...
Still gotta wait. Yeah? So, yeah, Charn is, you know, he's so smart and so clever and is such a visionary. And what an inspiring guy to sort of be able to see do his thing. And so when he comes out with stuff like that, you know, just what else do you say? You sit there flabbergasted.
Right. Well, I have to say, I love the fact that like, he's got this product that I think is stellar. And he's like, yeah, I'm going to go one step further and I'm going to do this now so that people who use this, who use the Korovin, can still, you know, like, that to me is he's just a genius of inventor. He's like a tinker guy, you know. He
for sure. I always have like a vision of Charn sort of with the lab coat on in like the darkened little laboratory working his magic on something for sure. And yeah, exactly, right? It's alive. Kind of crazy look, but he's such a humble guy too. He's definitely a guy that you can just sort of have a casual conversation with, although you can always see the gears are turning in his head on some sort of level. But what a great guy to be able to present a product like this as well. I don't know if he would want me saying this, but the whole reason that he approached me in the first place is because he doesn't drink, and so he wanted to get someone that had sort of a palate into the equation. And I was very fortunate at that juncture because that was when I had just won the competition. And so he sort of said, "Well, who's the guy that we should talk to? How about this guy who just won the competition?" And you know, we're both outside the realm of Vancouver. My restaurant's in Surrey. He's from New Westminster. And so we share a certain kinship in the suburbs out here as well.
Oh, okay. That was going to be my question is how did he decide you were the guy that he was going to do, but you...
I think that was it right there. You know, sort of said, let's approach Alistair and see what he has to say.
Okay. So. See, and that in its own right to me shows a bit. And I have never met him. I honestly don't even know what he really looks like.
He's a crazy inventor. He's got wild hair and crazy eyes, and that's think of like Albert Einstein, like Dr. Frankenstein meets Albert Einstein.
That's awesome. But when I first sent him the email, and he called me, so I was talking to him on the phone. And it was like I was talking to like my best bud, you know, in like 2 minutes flat. It was like, you know, we were just, we were on the phone, I think, for like 45 minutes, just chatting and all this stuff. And, you know, he was telling me how he came about this. And, you know, he's so easy to speak, so easy to talk to, and so down to earth. And you kind of think that you get these Albert Einstein type people, and they can't talk to you on a normal level. And
I'm sure we've all seen a ton of them, right?
Yeah. And he's there. He was literally, I felt like he was my best bud, you know, two minutes into a conversation with him. It was,
sure.
I hope maybe one day I'll meet him. I don't know. I guess I have to go up north or whatever, but, I hope to meet him. So you do use the V-spin at your restaurant.
For sure.
And so how do you go about doing it? I walk into your restaurant, I order a wine off of your amazing wine list, and you bring the V-spin to the table? Do you, you know?
For sure. In some scenarios, in most scenarios, we bring the V-spin to the table. Sometimes with why the glass pours, it's a little unwieldy to be doing glass pours with a V-spin because you would need someone just walking around the dining room with it by itself, but we use it behind the bar. And so we'll spin glasses of wine behind the bar and have like two or three of them going so that we're able to bring glasses up to speed really quickly. Mm-hmm. And then when someone orders a nice bottle, I love going to the table, presenting the bottle, pouring a taste, offering to decant the wine, and then using that angle to say, well, I have a very unique decanter that hyper aerates wine. Would you like to try it out? And then I drop this down on the table. And obviously, there's lots of oohs and ahs. You know, it's got a little digital display on it. There's a certain
that's blue.
Air.
That's blue.
Yeah, right. There's a certain air of mystery to it. It's definitely very intriguing to look at. And everyone's always like, "Wow, what do you got going on here? What's this all about?" And then, of course, the wine starts spinning. You've got this deep red or white vortex going through the middle of the wine. And, yeah, it's like putting a lava lamp down in front of a group of stoners. You know, everyone just kind of sits staring at it. And it shuts off automatically. So once you're done setting the time and the speed, it just does its thing for you. So I can engage the table. I can talk about, you know, different experiences I've had. Or I can go and use one at a different table. You know, it turns off. You come back. You pour a taste for a guest. And like I said, I mean, it's such a predictable reaction. There's nobody that is not floored. Like the first word out of everybody's mouth is always just like kind of like a contemplative sigh and then wow, right? Because they taste the two wines side by side and the difference is palpable. It is not just a party trick. It is a real difference. I always say that you get sort of like the wine showing the exuberance of a wine that's only been open for five or six minutes, but with the structure, like the phenolic structure of a wine that's been open for 3 or 4 hours, right? I mean, so you sort of are tasting wine in a fashion that you would never otherwise be able to taste it in, right? Because otherwise you'd be aerating your wine for 8 hours and then your fruit is going to be 7 or 8 hours old. But in this case, the fruit is only 5 or 6 minutes old, right? You pull the cork, pour a couple of tastes, decant the wine or spin the wine, and then you still have a very fresh, young wine, good to go.
Right. So tell us about the decanter itself. Do you know the story of like how he paired up, how that all came about. What decanter did you see when he first came to you?
He was dropping magnetic stir bars inside whichever decanter would listen to him, basically. And so he was dropping magnetic stir bars inside regular decanters, fancy decanters, whatever I had at the restaurant. And it would clatter around like crazy. It would make like a fierce noise. I was like covering my eyes like, oh my goodness, like when is this going to stop? Is the decanter going to break? But he approached Riedel about designing a decanter that would address all of that. And they ended up connecting him with Spieglau, obviously a German crystal manufacturer. And, I mean, they've been around for
ever,
you know, 300 years, right, a long time. And this is the first time in Spieglau's history that they ever put their name on a product that was not built by them. So they've co-branded with us, and they designed the decanter. They put it together for us at their plant in Germany. They put their name on the package, and they submitted us for the German Design Awards for tabletop this last year. So we sat with bated breath waiting to find out. It's like the Oscars of Germany, basically. It's a big deal. I mean, we make jokes about, you know, German efficiency and German design, but I mean, the design awards are a big deal, and we won. We won the German Design Award, and it was...
Congratulations!
I couldn't believe it, because, first of all, I didn't know what they were, and so I had to research that, and then I saw what a big deal they were, and then I saw that we won, basically, in quick succession. And I still don't know how to process information like that, because, it's, you know, it seems like, you know, win after win after win, guest after guest, you know, like, we have yet to find an obstacle that this unit has not been able to overcome. So
yeah, it gets cool. Boring winning all of those awards.
Yeah, well, you know, someone's got to.
You know, whatever.
We got a great team. So, like I said, I mean, Charn is such a visionary. So it wouldn't surprise me to find out that whatever twist he's got coming our way is just going to be for the better. And yeah, I can't wait to see how it works out.
Yeah, neither can I, because I do. I think he is a clever, clever person and genius, and, you know, tinker away and, you know, create more stuff that lets us enjoy our wine sooner. And, you know, because, you know, you shove it in the cellar because it says it's supposed to wait, and, you know, you don't know what's going to happen. You know, I'm all for opening now, enjoying now.
For sure. Well, like, I mean, it makes your cellar more accessible to you as well, too, especially with the Coravin, because you can Coravin a bottle, you know, take a little bit out, spin it, bring it up to speed, and then taste it and see where you're at with things. And so your cellar tends to turn over a little bit more that way, too. Lots of people sit on wine for way too long, right? And lots of, I mean, I don't have that problem, but there's lots of people that do. I look at a lot of people's cellars that time has sort of moved past a lot of those bottles, and yeah, with the V-spin, you don't have that problem, because you can age wine the gentle way, or you can pull a bottle out and bring it right up to speed and have it good to go. And I mean, there's a lot of austere wines that this the V-spin will unlock without any trouble. Okay. Very tannic Nebbiolos, you know, young austere Brunellos, like nothing is immune to its charms, so to speak.
That is awesome, and I mean, this is. I don't have to say, like, I don't want, it's not putting down any other product that I've tried, whatever. This has been the, of all the products, that has just blown me away. It really, it really has blown me away.
I'm with you. I mean, I was the biggest skeptic for sure. I'm not a gimmick guy. It's like, I've seen 1.5 million aerating units over the years and I haven't stuck with any of them. Right. I mean, they all have their day in the sun and moment of fashion, and then they all fade into the sort of obscurity. But this allows you to, you know, be engaged and have a conversation. And I mean, it's got a certain, like I said, like magical kind of appearance. You know, everyone's like, "Ooh, what's that?" Right. Well, it's unique. It's a winner.
Right. So tell me, where can people find? Let's do V-Spin. Well, let's do you first. Where can people find you? Are you on social media? Your restaurant on social media?
Yeah. So you'll find me at Tap Restaurant, T-A-P Restaurant. That's our Instagram feed. We're also on Facebook under, you know, Facebook.com/Tap Restaurant. If you look up Tap Restaurant, it's impossible not to find us. And then for the V-Spin, you'll find us on vspin.us. Or you'll also find us on Instagram at Open Your Wine. And that's sort of been the tag that we have stuck with for the last little while. So when we say a restaurant has taken us on as part of their program, we say the wine is now being served fully opened at blank restaurant. So open your wine on Instagram.
That's awesome. That's a great thing. I've been seeing a lot of the photos. I guess Instagram's algorithm has decided that I should see your photos, which I'm very happy about. But they're all, you know, it's great to see it. It's great. And I see the following getting bigger and bigger. So that is awesome. Awesome news.
For sure. Well, so, lots of people like to drink wine and everyone's always open to, no pun intended. Everyone is always open to sort of trying new things. Yeah. I'm here all day.
Yes. All right. So on Dracena Wines on Wine, I always, one of my favorite Friends episode is when Phoebe, I don't know, do you watch Friends? No, you don't watch TV at all.
I watched Friends back in the day. Okay. That was in my glory days.
Okay. So there's an episode where Joey wants to go cross country to Vegas and he wants to know north or south, and Phoebe comes up with this game. Which is just to let him figure out which way. And it's one of my favorite episodes. So we always end our Dracena Wines on Wine with this. Basically, the idea is I say two things. You answer it without thinking is pretty much all it is. All right. So no studying was necessary.
Okay.
We're going to start off with non-wine stuff, but then I do get into wine stuff. All right.
Okay.
So night or day?
Day.
Sunset or sunrise?
Sunrise.
Black or white?
White.
Walk or run?
Walk.
Food or drink?
Oh, you can't ask me that. Food.
That's a tough one for you, right?
Yeah.
I got another one, tough one for you. Old world, new world?
Old world.
Sweet or dry?
Dry.
Definitely. Bubbles or still?
Oh, man. I guess I would have to take still.
Okay. Oak or stainless?
Oak, but not new oak.
Good answer. All right, this is perfect for V-Spin. Drink now or drink later?
Drink now.
Blend or varietal?
Varietal.
Vintage or non-vintage?
Vintage.
Cork or screw cap?
I'm flexible on that one. I'll go cork here just because, but I certainly wouldn't want to die on that hill.
This is a little different. You're the first person I'm interviewing out of the country. Napa or Sonoma?
Sonoma.
Commercial or indigenous?
It's
more a winemaker's.
I'll placate the hipsters, and I'll say indigenous.
Okay. Bordeaux or Rhone?
Bordeaux.
There you go. And warm climate, cool climate?
Cool climate.
All right. Well, that's the end of the Phoebe's game. And I just want to thank you very much for taking time out to join in with me and to tell us your story and to share your story with V-Spin. Is there anything that you want to shout out? Anything?
You know what? It's a privilege to be with you today, and thank you very much for taking the time to set this up. And Valentine's Day is right around the corner, and so we'd like to say that with V-Spin, love is in the air. There you go.
And you can drink your wine a lot faster, which kind of helps on Valentine's Day in a lot of situations.
Sometimes for better, sometimes for worse.
Yes. Well, thank you very much. And thanks to Charn for coming up with this amazing product. And I look forward to seeing more stuff that he develops, because I'm sure there's more stuff in his brain that are going to see soon.
Just get it all out of there, right?
Yes. Just keep getting it on out. Keeping it on out. Thanks for joining.
You got it.
Thanks for listening to Dracena Wines Podcast. If you have suggestions of what topics you would like us to discuss, please reach out to us on social media or at dracenawines@gmail.com. If you liked our podcast, please subscribe at iTunes, Stitcher, Google Play, or whichever podcasting program you use. To easily subscribe at iTunes, please go to bit.ly/DracenaPodcast. That's bit.ly/D Dracena and P Podcast. We would greatly appreciate you leaving a review on your favorite system. It helps others to find us. Let's get social. Find us on Twitter, Instagram, Facebook, Snapchat, Pinterest, YouTube, Google Plus, and Periscope at Dracena Wines. And I am on LinkedIn as Lori Hoyt Budd. Check out our award-winning wine at DracenaWines.com. And remember to always pursue your passion. Sláinte!